area of their villa. "Your Majesty?" Dalinar asked. "You could call me Vargo if you wish," Taravangian said, pacing without looking at Dalinar. "It is what they called me as a youth."
"What's wrong?" Dalinar asked.
"I'm just worried. My scholars... It is nothing, Dalinar, nothing. Silliness. I am well today."
He stopped and squeezed his pale gray eyes shut. "That's good, isn't it?"
"Yes. But it is not a day to be heartless, so I worry."
"Heartless? What did he mean?" "Do you need to sit out the meeting?" Navani asked. Taravangian shook his head quickly.
"Come, let us go. I will be better once we've started, I'm sure."
As Dalinar stepped into the temple's main chamber, he found that he was looking forward to the meeting. What a strange revelation. He'd spent so much of his youth and middle years dreading politics and the endless ramblings of meetings. Now he was excited. He could see the outlines of something grand in this room. The Azish delegation warmly greeted Queen Fen, with Vizier Nura even giving Fen a poem she'd written as thanks for the Thalen hospitality. Fen's son made a point of sitting next to Renarin and chatting with him. Emperor Yonagon looked comfortable on his throne, surrounded by allies and friends. Bridge Four joked with the guards of High Prince Aladar, while Lift, the Edge Dancer, perched on a windowsill nearby, listening with a cocked head. In addition to the 5 scout women in uniform, 2 women in havas had joined Bridge Four. They carried notepads and pencils and had sewn Bridge Four patches to the upper sleeves of their dresses, the place where scribes commonly wore their platoon insignia. Alethi High Princes, Azish Viziers, Knights Radiant, and Thalen Admirals all in one room. The Prime of Emul talking tactics with Aladar, who had been aiding the beleaguered country. General Khal and Teshev speaking with the Princess of Yezir, who was eyeing Halam Khal, their eldest son, standing tall in his father's shard plate by the door. There was talk of a political union there. It would be the first in centuries between an Alethi and a Makabaki princedom.
"Unite them,"
a voice whispered the words in Dalinar's mind, echoing with the same resonant sound from months ago when Dalinar had first started seeing the visions.
"I'm doing so," Dalinar whispered back. "Unite them."
"Stormfather, is that you? Why do you keep saying this to me?"
"I said nothing."
It was growing hard to distinguish between his own thoughts and what came from the Stormfather. Visions and memories struggled for space in Dalinar's brain. To clear his mind, he strode around the perimeter of the circular temple chamber. Murals on the walls, ones he had healed with his abilities, depicted the Herald to Lenelot during several of his many, many last stands against the Voidbringers. A large map had been mounted on one wall depicting the Tarat Sea and surrounding areas, with markers noting the locations of their fleet. The room quieted as Dalinar stepped up and studied this. He glanced for a moment out the doors of the temple toward the bay. Already a few of the faster ships of their fleet had arrived, flying the flags of both Carbranth and Azir.
"Your Excellency," Dalinar said to Yonagon, "could you share news of your troops?"
The Emperor gave leave for Nura to report. The main fleet was less than a day away. Their outriders, or scout ships, as she called them, had spotted no indications of the enemy advance. They'd worried that this window between storms would be when the enemy would move, but so far there was no sign. The admirals began to discuss how to best patrol the seas while keeping Thalen City safe. Dalinar was pleased by the conversation, mostly because the admirals seemed to think that the real danger to Thalen City had passed. Avaden High Prince had managed to get a foot scout close enough to Marat to count the ships at the docks. Well over 100 vessels were waiting in the various coves and ports along the coast. For whatever reason, they weren't ready to launch yet, which was a blessing. The meeting progressed, with Fenn belatedly welcoming everyone. Dalinar realized he should have let her take charge from the start. She described the defenses in Thalen City and raised concerns from her guildmasters about Amaram's troops. Apparently, they'd been carousing. Amaram stiffened at that. For all his faults, he liked to run a tight army. Sometime near the end of this discussion, Dalinar noticed Renarin shifting uncomfortably in his seat. As the Azish scribes began explaining their code of rules and guidelines for the coalition, Renarin excused himself in a hoarse voice and left. Dalinar glanced at Navani, who seemed troubled. Yasna stood to follow, but was interrupted by a scribe bringing her a small sheaf of documents. She accepted them and moved to Navani's side so they could study them together. "Should we break?" Dalinar thought, checking his forearm clock. They'd only been going for an hour, and the Azish were obviously excited by their guidelines. The Stormfather rumbled. "What?" Dalinar thought.
Something is coming. A storm."
Dalinar stood up, looking about the room, half expecting assassins to attack. His sudden motion caught the attention of one of the Azish viziers, a short man with a very large hat. "Brightlord?" the interpreter asked at a word from the vizier. Dalinar could feel it.
"Something's wrong."
"Dalinar?" Fenn asked. "What are you talking about?" Span reeds suddenly started blinking throughout the room. A dozen flashing rubies. Dalinar's heart sidestepped. Anticipation spren rose around him, streamers whipping from the ground as the various scribes grabbed the blinking span reeds from boxes or belts and set them out to begin writing. Yasna didn't notice that one of hers was blinking. She was too distracted by what she and Navani were reading.
"The Everstorm just hit Shinovar," Queen Fenn finally explained, reading over a scribe's shoulder.
"Impossible," Eole Satius said. "It has only been 5 days since the last one. They come at 9-day intervals."
"Yes, well, I think we have enough confirmation," Fenn said, nodding toward the span reeds.
"The storm is too new," Teshev said. She pulled her shawl closer as she read. "We don't know it well enough to truly judge its patterns. The reports from Steen say it is particularly violent this time, moving faster than before."
Dalinar felt cold.
"How long until it reaches us?" Fenn asked.
"Hours yet," Teshub said.
"It can take a full day for the high storm to get from one side of Roshar to the other, and the Everstorm is slower. Usually."
"It's moving faster, though," Yonagon said through his interpreter.
"How far away are our ships? How are we going to shelter them?"
"Peace, Your Excellency," Fenn said. "The ships are close, and the new docks miles farther along the coast are sheltered from both east and west. We merely need to make sure the fleet goes directly there instead of stopping here to drop off troops."
The room buzzed with conversations as the various groups received reports from their contacts in Tashik, who in turn would be relaying information from contacts in Eerie, Steen, or even Shinovar.
"We should break for a short time," Dalinar told them.
The others agreed, distracted, and separated into groups scattered about the room. Dalinar settled back in his seat, releasing a held breath.
"That wasn't so bad. We can deal with this." "That wasn't it," the Stormfather said.
He rumbled, his concerned voice growing very soft as he continued,
"There's more."
Dalinar jumped back to his feet, instincts prompting him to thrust his hand to the side, fingers splayed to summon a blade he no longer possessed. Bridge 4 responded immediately, dropping food from the table of victuals, grabbing spears. Nobody else seemed to notice. But notice what? No attack came. Conversations continued on all sides. Yasna and Navani were still huddled side by side, reading. Navani gasped softly, safe hand going to her mouth. Yasna looked at Dalinar, lips drawn to a line.
"Their message wasn't about the storm," Dalinar thought, pulling his chair over to them. "All right," he whispered, though they were far enough from other groups to have some privacy. What is it?
A breakthrough was made in translating the Dawn Chant, Navani whispered. Teams in Karbranth and the monasteries of Yarkoved have arrived at the news separately, using the seed we provided through the visions. We are finally receiving translations.
That's good, right? Dalinar said. Yasna sighed.
Uncle, the piece that historians have been most eager to translate is called the Ela Steli. Other sources claim it is old, perhaps the oldest document in written memory, said to be scribed by the heralds themselves. From the translation that finally came in today, the carving appears to be the account of someone who witnessed the very first coming of the Voidbringers, long, long ago, even before the first desolation.
Blood of my fathers, Dalinar said.
Before the first desolation? The last desolation had happened more than 4,000 years ago. They were speaking of events lost to time.
And we can read it?
They came from another world, Navani said, reading from her sheet. Using powers that we have been forbidden to touch. Dangerous powers of spren and searches. They destroyed their lands and have come to us begging. We took them in as commanded by the gods. What else could we do? They were a people forlorn, without home. Our pity destroyed us, for their betrayal extended even to our gods, to spren, stone, and wind. Beware the otherworlders, the traitors, those with tongues of sweetness but with minds that lust for blood. Do not take them in. Do not give them succor. Well were they named Voidbringers, for they brought the void, the empty pit that sucks in emotion. A new god, their god. These Voidbringers know no songs. They cannot hear Roshar, and where they go they bring silence. They look soft with no shell, but they are hard. They have but one heart, and it cannot ever live.
She lowered the page. Dalinar frowned.
It's nonsense, he thought. Is it claiming that the first Parshman who came to invade had no carapace?
But how would the writer know that Parshman should have carapace? And what is this about songs? It clicked.
That was not written by a human, Dalinar whispered.
No, uncle, Yasna said softly. The writer was a dawn singer, one of the original inhabitants of Roshar. The dawn singers weren't spren, as theology has often postulated, nor were they heralds. They were parshmen, and the people they welcomed to their world, the otherworlders,
were us, Dalinar whispered.
He felt cold, like he'd been dunked in icy water.
They named us Voidbringers.
Yasna sighed.
I have suspected this for a time. The first desolation was the invasion of humankind onto Roshar. We came here and seized this land from the Parshmen after we accidentally used surge binding to destroy our previous world. That is the truth that destroyed the Radiance.
The Stormfather rumbled in his mind. Dalinar stared at that sheet of paper in Navani's hand. Such a small, seemingly unimportant object to have created such a pit inside of him.
It's true, isn't it? He thought at the Stormfather. Storms, we're not the defenders of our homeland. We're the invaders.
Nearby, Taravangian argued softly with his scribes, then finally stood up. He cleared his throat and the various groups slowly stilled. The Azish contingent had servants pull their chairs back toward the group, and Queen Fen returned to her place, though she didn't sit. She stood, arms folded, looking perturbed.
I have had disconcerting news, Terabangian said. Over the span read just now. It involves Bright Lord Colin. I don't wish to be objectionable.
No, Ben said. I've heard it too.
I'm going to need an explanation.
Agreed,
Nora said. Dalinar stood up.
I realize this is troubling. I haven't had time to adjust. Perhaps we could adjourn and worry about the storm first. We can discuss this later.
Perhaps,
Terabangian said.
Yes, perhaps. But it is a problem. We have believed that ours is a righteous war, but this news of mankind's origins has me disconcerted.
What are you talking about? Fenn said.
The news from the Vedan translators? Ancient texts manifesting that humans came from another world?
Bah, Fenn said. Dusty books and ideas for philosophers. What I want to know about is this High King business.
High King?
Yonagon asked through an interpreter.
I have an essay, Fenn said, slapping papers against her hand, from Zeta, the Voiced, claiming that before King Elokar left for Alethkar, he swore to Dalinar to accept him as emperor.
Nora, the vizier, leaped to her feet.
What?
Emperor is an exaggeration, Dalinar said, trying to reorient toward this unexpected attack. It's an internal Alethi matter.
Navani stood beside him.
My son was merely concerned about his political relation to Dalinar. We have prepared an explanation for you all, and our High Princes can confirm that we are not looking to expand our influence to your nations.
And this,
Nora said, holding up some pages.
Were you preparing an explanation for this as well?
What is that?
Dalinar asked, bracing himself.
Accounts of two visions,
Nora said,
that you didn't share with us, in which you supposedly met and fraternized with a being known as Odium.
Behind Dalinar, Lift gasped. He glanced toward her and the men of Bridge Four, who were muttering among themselves.
This is bad, Dalinar thought. Too much, too fast for me to control.
Yasna leaped to her feet.
This is obviously a concentrated attempt to destroy our reputation. Someone deliberately released all this information at the same time.
Is it true?
Nora asked in Alethi.
Dalana Kolin, have you met with our enemy?
Navani gripped his arm. Yasna subtly shook her head. Don't answer that.
Yes,
Dalinar said.
Did he?
Nora asked pointedly.
Tell you you'd destroy Roshar.
What of this ancient record?
Terabangian said.
It claims that the Radiants already destroyed one world. Is that not what caused them to disband? They worried that their powers could not be controlled.
I'm still trying to wrap my mind around this High King nonsense,
Ben said.
Or was it merely an internal Alethi matter, if you've allowed another king to swear to you?
Everyone started talking at once. Navani and Yasna stepped forward, responding to the attacks, but Dalinar only sank into his seat. It was all falling apart. A sword, as keen as any on a battlefield, had been rammed into the heart of his coalition.
This is what you feared, he thought. A world that turns not upon force of armies, but upon the concerns of scribes and bureaucrats. And in that world, he had just been deftly outflanked.
112. For the Living.
I am certain there are nine unmade. There are many legends and names that I could have misinterpreted, conflating two unmade into one. In the next section, I will discuss my theories on this.
From Hesse's Mythica, page 266. Kaladin remembered a woman's kiss. Tara had been special. The dark-eyed daughter of an assistant quartermaster, she had grown up helping with her father's work. Though she was 100% Alethi, she preferred dresses of an old-fashioned Thalen style, which had an apron-like front with straps over the shoulders and skirts that ended right below the knee. She'd wear a buttoned shirt underneath, often in a bright color, brighter than most dark eyes could afford. Tara knew how to squeeze the most out of her spheres. That day, Kaladin had been sitting on a stump, shirt off, sweating. The evening was growing cold as the sun set, and he basked in the last warmth. His spear resting across his lap, he toyed with a rock of white, brown, and black, alternating colors. The warmth from the sun was mirrored as someone warm hugged him from behind, wrapping her arms across his chest. Kaladin rested a calloused hand on Tara's smooth one, drinking in her scent of starched uniforms, new leather, and other clean things.
"You're done early," he said. "I thought there were green vines to outfit today."
"I have the new girl doing the rest."
"I'm surprised. I know how much you like this part."
"Storms," she said, slipping around in front of him. "They get so embarrassed when you measure them." "Hold on, kid. I'm not making a pass at you because I'm putting a measuring tape up against your chest. I swear."
She lifted his spear, looking it over with a critical eye, testing the balance.
"I wish you'd let me requisition a new one for you."
"I like that one. Took me forever to find one long enough."
She peered along the length of the weapon to make sure it was straight. She would never trust it, as she hadn't personally requisitioned it for him. She wore green today, under a brown skirt, her black hair tied back in a tail. Slightly plump, with a round face and firm build, Tara's beauty was a subtle thing, like an uncut gemstone. The more you saw of it, the more you discovered of its natural facets, the more you loved it, until one day it struck you that you'd never known anything as wonderful.
"Any young boys among the green vines?" Kaladin asked, standing up and pocketing Tien's stone.
"I didn't notice."
He grunted, waving to Gaul, one of the other squad leaders.
"You know I like to watch for kids who might need a little extra looking out for."
"I know, but I was busy. We got a caravan from Kolinar today."
She leaned close to him.
"There was real flour in one of the packages. I traded in some favors. You know I've been wanting you to try some of my father's Thalen bread? I thought maybe we'd fix it tonight."
"Your father hates me."
"He's coming around. Besides, he loves anyone who compliments his bread."
"I have evening practice."
"You just got done practicing."
"I just got done warming up."
He looked to her, then grimaced. "I organized the evening practice, Tara. I can't just skip it. Besides, I thought you were going to be busy all evening. Maybe tomorrow? Lunch?" He kissed her on the cheek and reclaimed his spear. He'd taken only a step away when she spoke.
"I'm leaving, Cal,"
she said from behind. He stumbled over his own feet, then spun about.
"What?" "I'm transferring," she said. "They offered me a scribe's job in Morn's vault, with the High Prince's house. It's a good opportunity, particularly for someone like me."
"But,"
he gaped.
"Leaving?"
"I wanted to tell you over dinner, not out here in the cold. It's something I have to do. Father's getting older. He's worried he'll end up being shipped to the Shattered Plains. If I can get work, he can join me."
Kaladin put a hand to his head. She couldn't just leave, could she? Tara walked over, stood on the tips of her toes, and kissed him lightly on the lips.
"Could you not go?"
he asked. She shook her head.
"Maybe I could get a transfer," he said, "to the High Prince's standing house guard."
"Would you do that?"
No, he wouldn't.
Not while he carried that stone in his pocket, not while the memory of his brother dying was fresh in his mind, not while light-eyed high lords got boys killed in petty fights.
"Oh, Cal,"
she whispered, then squeezed his arm.
"Maybe someday you'll learn how to be there for the living, not just for the dead."
After she left, he got two letters from her talking about her life in Morn's vault. He had paid someone to read them to him. He never sent responses, because he was stupid, because he didn't understand, because men make mistakes when they're young and angry. Because she had been right. Kaladin shouldered his harpoon, leading his companions through the strange forest. They'd flown part of the way, but needed to conserve what little stormlight they had left. So they'd spent the last 2 days hiking. Trees and more trees, lifespren floating among them, the occasional bobbing souls of fish. Syl kept saying they were lucky they hadn't encountered any angerspren or other predators. To her, this forest was strangely silent, strangely empty. The jungle-style trees had given way to taller, more statuesque ones, with deep crimson trunks and limbs like burnt red crystals that, at the ends, burst into small collections of minerals. The rugged obsidian landscape was full of deep valleys and endless towering hills. Kaladin was beginning to worry that, despite the motionless sun to provide an unerring way to gauge their heading, they were going in the wrong direction.
"Storms, bridge boy,"
Adolin said, hiking up the incline after him.
"Maybe a break?"
"At the top," Kaladin said. Without stormlight, Shallan trailed farthest behind, pattern at her side. Exhaustion spren circled in the air above like large chickens. Though she tried to push herself, she wasn't a soldier, and often was the biggest limitation to their pace. Of course, without her map-making skills and memory of Thalen City's exact location, they probably wouldn't have any idea which way to go. Fortunately, there was no sign of pursuit. Still, Kaladin couldn't help worrying that they were moving too slowly. "Be there," Tara had told him, "for the living." He urged them up this hillside, past a section of broken ground where the obsidian had fractured like layers of creme that hadn't hardened properly. Worry pulled him forward, step after relentless step. He had to get to the Oath Gate. He would not fail like he had in Kolinar. A single glowing wind spren burst alight next to him as he reached the top of the hill. Cresting it, he found himself overlooking a sea of souls. Thousands upon thousands of candle flames bobbed about in the next valley over, moving above a grand ocean of glass beads. Thalen City. Adolin joined him, then finally Shallan and the three spren. Shallan sighed and settled to the ground, coughing softly from the effort of the climb. Amid the sea of lights were two towering spren, much like the ones they'd seen in Kolinar. One sparkled a multitude of colors, while the other shimmered an oily black. Both stood tall, holding spears as long as a building, the sentries of the Oath Gate. And they didn't look corrupted. Beneath them, the device itself manifested as a large stone platform with a wide, sweeping white bridge running over the beads and to the shore. That bridge was guarded by an entire army of enemy spren, hundreds, perhaps thousands, strong. 113. The Thing Men Do Best.
If I'm correct and my research true, then the question remains. Who is the ninth unmade? Is it truly Dai Gonarthus? If so, could their actions have actually caused the complete destruction of Aimea?
From Hesse's Mythica, page 307. Dalinar stood alone in the rooms Queen Fen had given him, staring out the window looking west, toward Shinovar. Far beyond the horizon, a land with strange beasts like horses, chickens, and humans. He'd left the other monarchs arguing in the temple below. Anything he said only seemed to widen the rifts among them. They didn't trust him. They'd never really trusted him. His deception proved them right. Storms. He felt furious with himself. He should have released those visions, should have immediately told the others about Elokar. There had simply been so much piling on top of him. His memories, his excommunication, worry for Adolin and Elokar. Part of him couldn't help but be impressed by how deftly he'd been outmaneuvered. Queen Fen worried about Dalinar being genuine. The enemy had delivered perfect proof that Dalinar had hidden political motives.
Nura and the Azish, worried that the powers were dangerous, whispering of lost radiance. To them, the enemy indicated that Dalinar was being manipulated by evil visions. And to Teravangian, who spoke so often of philosophy, the enemy suggested that their moral foundation for the war was a sham. Or maybe that dart was for Dalinar himself. Teravangian said that a king was justified in doing terrible things in the name of the state. But Dalinar, for once he'd assumed what he was doing was right.
"Did you really think you belonged here?" the Stormfather asked. "That you were native to Roshar?" "Yes, maybe," Dalinar said. "I thought maybe we came from Shinovar originally." "That is the land you were given," the Stormfather said. "A place where the plants and animals you brought here could grow."
"We weren't able to confine ourselves to what we were given."
"When has any man ever been content with what he has?"
"When has any tyrant ever said to himself, 'This is enough'?" Dalinar whispered, remembering words Gavilar had once spoken. The Stormfather rumbled.
"The Almighty kept this from his radiance," Dalinar said. "When they discovered it, they abandoned their vows." "It is more than that. My memory of all of this is strange. First, I was not fully awake. I was but the spren of a storm. Then I was like a child, changed and shaped during the frantic last days of a dying god. But I do remember. It was not only the truth of humankind's origin that caused the recreants. It was the distinct, powerful fear that they would destroy this world, as men like them had destroyed the one before. The Radiants abandoned their vows for that reason, as will you."
"I will not," Dalinar said. "I won't let my Radiants retread the fate of their predecessors."
"Won't you?"
Dalinar's attention was drawn to a solemn group of men leaving the temple below. Bridge 4. Spears held on slumped shoulders, heads bowed as they quietly marched down the steps. Dalinar scrambled out of his villa and ran down the steps to intercept the bridgemen.
"Where are you going?"
he demanded. They halted, falling into ranks at attention.
"Sir,"
Teft said,
"we thought we'd head back to Urethiru. We left some of the men behind, and they deserve to know about this business with the ancient Radiants."
"What we've discovered doesn't change the fact that we are being invaded," Dalinar said.
"Invaded by people trying to reclaim their homeland," Sigzil said. "Storms. I'd be mad too."
"We're supposed to be the good guys, you know," Leighton said. "Fighting for a good cause, for once in our storming lives."
Echoes of his own thoughts. Dalinar found he couldn't formulate an argument against that.
"We'll see what Cal says," Teft replied. "Sir. All respect, sir. But we'll see what he says. He knows the right of things, even when the rest of us don't."
"And if he never returns," Dalinar thought, "what if none of them return?"
It had been 4 weeks. How long could he keep pretending that Adolin and Elokar were alive out there somewhere? That pain hid behind the rest, taunting him. The bridgemen gave Dalinar their unique, cross-armed salute, then left without waiting to be dismissed.
"In the past, Honor was able to guard against this," the Stormfather told him. "He convinced the Radiants they were righteous, even if this land hadn't originally been theirs. Who cares what your ancestors did when the enemy is trying to kill you right now? But in the days leading to the recreants, Honor was dying. When that generation of knights learned the truth, Honor did not support them. He raved, speaking of the Dawn Shards, ancient weapons used to destroy the Tranquiline Halls. Honor promised that Surgebinders would do the same to Roshar."
"Odium claimed the same thing."
"He can see the future, though only cloudily. Regardless,
understand now as I never did before. The ancient Radiants didn't abandon their oaths out of pettiness. They tried to protect the world. I blame them for their weakness, their broken oaths. But I also understand. You have cursed me, human, with this capacity.
The meeting in the temple seemed to be breaking up. The Azish contingent started down the steps.
Our enemy hasn't changed, Dalinar said to them. The need for a coalition is as strong as ever.
The young emperor, being carried in a palanquin, didn't look at him. Oddly, the Azish didn't make for the Oath Gate, instead taking a path down into the city. Only Vizier Nura idled to speak to him.
Yasna Kulin might be right, she said in Azish. The destruction of our old world, your secret visions, this business with you being High King. It seems too great a coincidence for it all to come at once.
Then you can see that we're being manipulated.
Manipulated by the truth, Kulin,
she said, meeting his eyes.
That Oath Gate is dangerous. These powers of yours are dangerous. Deny it.
I cannot. I will not found this coalition on lies.
You already have.
He drew in a sharp breath. Nura shook her head.
We will take the scout ships and join the fleet carrying our soldiers. Then we will wait out this storm. After that, we shall see. Derevengian has said we may use his vessels to return to our empire without needing to use the Oath Gates.
She walked off after the emperor, eschewing the palanquin waiting to carry her. Others drifted down the steps around him. Vaden High Princes, who gave excuses. Thalen Light Eyes from their guild councils, who avoided him. The Alethi High Princes and scribes expressed solidarity, but Alethkar couldn't do this on its own. Queen Fen was one of the last to leave the temple.
Will you leave me too?
Dalinar asked. She laughed.
To go where, old hound? An army is coming this way. I still need your famous Alethi infantry. I can't afford to throw you out.
Such bitterness.
Oh, did it show? I'm going to check on the city's defenses. If you decide to join us, we'll be at the walls.
I'm sorry, Fen, Dalinar said, for betraying your trust.
She shrugged.
I don't really think you intend to conquer me, Kulin. But oddly, I can't help wishing I did have to worry. Best I can tell, you've become a good man right in time to bravely sink with this ship. That's commendable, until I remember that the Blackthorn would have long since murdered everyone trying to sink him.
Fen and her consort climbed into a palanquin. People continued to trickle past, but eventually Dalinar stood alone before the quiet temple.
I'm sorry, Dalinar,
Terebangian said softly from behind. Dalinar turned, surprised to find the old man sitting on the steps.
I assumed everyone had the same information, and that it would be best to air it. I didn't expect all of this.
This isn't your fault, Dalinar said.
And yet...
He stood up, then walked slowly down the steps.
I'm sorry, Dalinar. I fear I can no longer fight beside you.
Why?
Dalinar said.
Terevangian, you're the most pragmatic ruler I've met. Aren't you the one who talked to me about the importance of doing what was politically necessary?
And that is what I must do now, Dalinar. I wish I could explain. Forgive me.
He ignored Dalinar's pleas, limping down the stairs. Moving stiffly, the old man climbed into a palanquin and was carried away. Dalinar sank down on the steps.
I tried my best to hide this, the Stormfather said, so we could continue living a lie. It is, in my experience, the thing men do best.
Don't insult us.
What? Is this not what you've been doing these last 6 years? pretending that you aren't a monster? Pretending you didn't kill her, Dalinar?"
Dalinar winced. He made a fist, but there was nothing here he could fight. He dropped his hand to his side, shoulders drooping. Finally, he climbed to his feet and quietly trudged up the stone steps to his villa. The end of part 4.
Interludes. Venli, Rissin, Teft. Interlude 12. Rhythm of Withdrawal. After living for a week in a cave in Marat, Venli found herself missing the stone hermitage she'd been given outside Koldenar. Her new dwelling was even more austere, with only a single blanket for sleeping and a simple cook fire upon which she prepared fish the crowds brought her. She was growing dirty, rough. That was what the Fused seemed to want, a hermit living in the wilds. Apparently that was more convincing for the local crowds they brought to listen to her, most of whom were former Thalen slaves. She was instructed to speak of passion and emotion more often than she had in Alethkar. "My people are dead now," Venli said to Destruction, repeating the now familiar speech. "They fell in that last assault, singing as they drew the storm. I remain, but my people's work is done." Those words hurt. Her people couldn't be completely gone, could they? "The day now belongs to your passion," she continued to command. "We had named ourselves listeners because of the songs we heard. These are your heritage, but you are not to just listen, but sing. Adopt the rhythms and passions of your ancestors. You must sail to battle, for the future, for your children, and for us, those who died that you might exist." She turned away, as instructed that she do after the end of each speech. She wasn't allowed to answer questions any longer. Not since she'd talked with some of these singers about the specific history of her people. It made her wonder. Did the Fused and the Voidspren fear the heritage of her people, even as they used her for their purposes? Or did they not trust her for other reasons? She put her hand to her pouch. Odium didn't seem to know that she'd been in that vision with Dalinar Kolin. Behind, a Voidspren led the Thalen singers away. Venli moved toward her cave, but then hesitated. A Fused sat on the rocks just above the opening. "Ancient one?" she asked. He grinned at her and giggled. "Another one of those." She started into the cave, but he dropped and seized her under the arms, then carried her into the sky. Venli prevented herself, with difficulty, from trying to batter him away. The Fused never touched her, not even the crazy ones, without orders. Indeed, this one flew her down to one of the many ships at the harbor, where Rhein, the tall Fused who had accompanied her during her first days preaching in Alethkar, stood at the prow. He glanced toward her as she was landed roughly on the deck. She hummed to conceit at her treatment. He hummed to spite, a small acknowledgement of a wrong done, the best she'd get out of him. So she hummed to satisfaction in response. "Ancient one?" she asked to craving.
"You are to accompany us as we sail," he said to command. "You may wash yourself in the cabin as we go if you wish. There is water."
Venli hummed to craving and looked toward the main cabin. Craving slipped into abashment as she considered the sheer size of the fleet that was launching around her. Hundreds of ships, which must have been filled with thousands of singers, were sailing from coves all along the coast. They dotted the seas like rock buds on the plains. "Now?" she asked to abashment. "I wasn't prepared. I didn't know."
You may wish to grab hold of something. The storm will soon arrive.
She looked to the west. A storm? She hummed to Craving again.
Ask,
Ryan said to Command. I can easily see the strength of the grand assault force we've gathered, but why do we need such? Are not the Fused enough of an army themselves?
Cowardice, he asked to derision. You do not wish to fight.
I simply seek to understand. Rhyme changed to a new rhythm, one she rarely heard. The rhythm of withdrawal, one of the only new rhythms that had a calm tone.
The strongest and most skilled of our number have yet to awaken. But even if we were all awake, we would not fight this war alone. This world will not be ours. We fight to give it to you, our descendants. When it is won, our vengeance taken and our homeland secured at long last, we will sleep, finally.
He then pointed at the cabin.
Go prepare. We will sail swiftly, with Odium's own storm to guide us.
As if in agreement with his words, red lightning flashed on the western horizon. Interlude 13. Rissen. Rissen was bored. Once, she'd walked to the farthest reaches of Roshar, trading with the isolationist Shin. Once she'd sailed with her Babsk to ice water and cut a deal with pirates. Once she'd climbed Reshi great shells, which were as large as towns. Now she kept Queen Fen's ledgers. It was a good job, with an office in the Thalen Gemstone Reserve. Vestim, her former Babsk, had traded favors to get her the job. Her apprenticeship finished, she was a free woman, no longer a student, now a master of boredom. She sat in her chair, doodling at the edges of a Leoforn word puzzle. Rissen could balance while sitting, though she couldn't feel her legs, and embarrassingly couldn't control certain bodily functions. She had to rely upon her porters to move her. Career over, freedom over, life over. She sighed and pushed away her word puzzle. Time to get back to work. Her duties included annotating the Queen's pending mercantile contracts with references to previous ones, keeping the Queen's personal vault in the Gemstone Reserve, preparing weekly expenditure reports, and accounting the Queen's salary as a portion of taxable income from various Thalen interests at home and abroad. Whee! She had an audit today, which had prevented her from attending Fen's meeting with the monarchs. She might have enjoyed seeing the Blackthorn and the Azish Emperor. Well, the other aides would bring her word once the meeting was through. For now, she prepared for her audit, working by sphere light, as the reserve didn't have windows. The walls of her office were blank. She'd originally hung souvenirs from her years traveling, but those had reminded her of a life she could no longer have. A life full of promise. A life that had ended when she'd stupidly fallen from the head of a great shell and landed here, in this cripple's chair. Now the only memento she kept was a single pot of Shin grass. Well, that and the little creature sleeping among the blades. Cheery Cheery breathed softly, rippling the too dumb grass, which didn't pull into burrows. It grew in something called soil, which was like creme that never hardened. Cheery Cheery herself was a small winged beast a little longer than Rissen's outstretched palm. The Reshi named her a larkin, and though she was the size of a large kremling, she had the snout, carapace, and build of a creature far more grand. An axe-hound, perhaps, with wings. A lithe little flying predator. Though for all her dangerous appearance, she sure did like to nap. As Rissen worked, Chirichiri finally stirred and peeked out from the grass, then made a series of clicking sounds with her jaw. She climbed down onto the desk and eyed the diamond mark Rissen was using for light. "No," Rissen said, double-checking numbers in her ledger. Chirichiri clicked again, slinking toward the gem. "You just ate," Rissen said, then used her palm to shoo the larkin back. "I need that for light." Chirichiri clicked in annoyance, then flew, wings beating very quickly, to the upper reaches of the room, where she settled onto one of her favorite perches, the lintel above the doorway. A short time later, a knock at the door interrupted Rissen's tedium. "Come," she said. Her man, Wumlak, who was half assistant, half porter, poked his head in. "Let me guess," Rissen said. "The auditor is early." They always were.
"Yes, but..."
Behind Wumlak, Rissen caught sight of a familiar flat-topped conical hat. Wumlak stepped back and gestured toward an old man in blue and red robes, his Thalen eyebrows tucked behind his ears. Spry for a man past his 70th year, Vestim had a wise but unyielding way about him, inoffensively calculating. He carried a small box under his arm. Rissen gasped in delight. Once she would have leaped to her feet to embrace him. Now she could only sit there and gape. "But you were off to trade in New Nuttenen."
"The seas are not safe these days," Vestim said, "and the Queen requested my aid in difficult negotiations with the Alethi. I have returned, with some reluctance, to accept an appointment from Her Majesty."
"An appointment? In the government?" Rissen asked.
"Minister of Trade, and royal liaison to the Guild of Shipping Merchants."
Rissen could only gape further. That was the highest civilian appointment in the kingdom.
"But, Babsk, you'll have to live in Thalen City." "Well, I am feeling my age these days."
"Nonsense. You're as lively as I am." Rissen glanced at her legs. "More."
"Not so lively that I wouldn't mind a seat."
She realized he was still standing in the doorway to her office. Even all these months after her accident, she pushed with her arms as if to spring up and fetch him a seat. "Idiot." "Please, sit," she said, waving toward the room's other chair. He settled down and placed his box on the table, while she twisted to do something to welcome him, leaning over precariously to get the teapot. The tea was cold, unfortunately. Chirichiri had drained the gemstone in her fabrile hot plate.
"I can't believe you'd agree to settle down," she said, handing him a cup. "Some would say that the opportunity afforded me is far too important to refuse."
"Storm that," Rissen said. "Staying in one city will wilt you. You'll spend your days doing paperwork and being bored."
"Rissen," he said, taking her hand. "Child."
She looked away. Chirichiri flew down and landed on her head, clicking angrily at Vestim.
"I promise I'm not going to hurt her," the old man said, grinning and releasing Rissen's hand. "Here, I brought you something. See?"
He held up a ruby chip. Chirichiri considered, then hovered down above his hand, not touching it, and sucked the stormlight out. It flew to her in a little stream, and she clicked happily, then zipped over to the pot of grass and wriggled into it, peeking out at Vestim.
"You still have the grass, I see," he said.
"You ordered me to keep it."
"You're now a master merchant, Rissen. You needn't obey the orders of a doddering old man."
The grass rustled as Chirichiri shifted. She was too big to hide in it, though that never stopped her from trying.
"Chirichiri likes it," Rissen said. "Maybe because it can't move, kind of like me." "Have you tried that radiant?"
"Yes. He can't heal my legs.
It's been too long since my accident, which is appropriate. This is my consequence. Payment for a contract I entered into willingly the moment I climbed down the side of that great shell.
You don't have to lock yourself away, Rissen.
This is a good job. You yourself got it for me.
Because you refused to go on further trading expeditions.
What good would I be? One must trade from a position of power, something I can never do again. Besides, an exotic goods merchant who can't walk? You know how much hiking is required?
Vestim took her hand again.
I thought you were frightened. I thought you wanted something safe and secure. But I've been listening. Hamalka has told me.
You spoke to my superior?
People talk.
My work has been exemplary, Rissen said.
It isn't your work she's worried about.
He turned and brushed the grass, drawing Chiri-Chiri's attention to his hand. She narrowed her eyes at it.
Do you remember what I told you when you cut out that grass?
That I was to keep it, until it no longer seemed odd.
You've always been so quick to make assumptions. About yourself, now, more than others. Here. Perhaps this will... Anyway, have a look.
Vestim handed her the box. She frowned, then slid off the wooden lid. Inside was a wound-up cord of white rope. Beside that, a slip of paper?
Rissen took out the sheet, reading it.
A deed of ownership? She whispered. To a ship?
Brand new, Vestim said. A three-masted frigate. The largest I've ever owned, with Fabril stabilizers for storms of the finest Thalen engineering. I had her built in the shipyards of Kulna City, which luckily sheltered her from both storms. While I've given the rest of my fleet, what's left of it, to the Queen for use against the invasion, this one I reserved.
Wandersail, Rissen said, reading the ship's name. Babsk, you are a romantic. Don't tell me you believe that old story.
One can believe in a story without believing it happened.
He smiled.
Whose rules are you following, Rissen? Who is forcing you to stay here? Take this ship. Go. I wish to fund your initial trade run as an investment. After that, you'll have to do well to maintain a vessel of this size.
Rissen recognized the white rope now. It was a captain's cord some 20 feet long, used as a traditional Thalen mark of ownership. She'd wrap it in her colors and string it in the rigging of her ship. It was a gift worth a fortune.
I can't take this, she said, putting the box on the desk. I'm sorry,
He pushed the cord into her hands.
Just think about it, Rissen. Humor an old man who can no longer travel.
She held the rope and found her eyes watering.
Father, Babsk, I have an auditor coming today. I need to be composed and ready to account the Queen's vault.
Fortunately, the auditor is an old friend who has seen much worse from you than a few tears.
But you're the Minister of Trade.
They were going to make me go to a stuffy meeting with old Colin and his soldiers, Vestim said, leaning in. But I insisted on coming to do this. I've always wanted to see the Queen's vault in person.
Rissen wiped her tears, trying to recover some of her decorum.
Well, let's be to it, then. I assure you, everything is in order.
The sphere vault's thick steel door required three numbers to open, each rolled into a different dial in three separate rooms. Rissen and other scribes knew one number, the door guards protected another, and an auditor, like Vestim, was typically given a third by the Queen or the Minister of the Treasury. all were changed at random intervals. Rissen knew for a fact that this was mostly for show. In a world of shard blades, the real defense of the vault was in the layers of guards who surrounded the building, and, more importantly, in the careful auditing of its contents. Though novels were full of stories of the vault being robbed, the only real thefts had occurred through embezzlement. Rissen moved her dial to the proper number, then pulled the lever in her room. The vault door finally opened with a resounding thump, and she scrambled her dial and called for Wumlak. Her porter entered, then pushed down on the back handles of her chair, lifting the front legs so he could wheel it out to meet the others. Vestim stood by the now open vault door with several soldiers. Today's inner door guard, Talik, stood with crossbow at the ready, barring entry. There was a slot that let the men stationed in the vault communicate with those outside, but the door couldn't be opened from within. "Scheduled accounting of the Queen's personal vault," Rissen said to him. "Daily passcode lockstep." Click nodded, stepping back and lowering his crossbow. Vestim entered with ledger in hand, trailed by a member of the Queen's Guard, a rough-looking man with a shaved head and spiked eyebrows. Once they were in, Wumlak wheeled Rissen through the vault door, down a short corridor and into a little alcove, where another guard, Fladim today, waited. Her porter brushed off his hands, then nodded to her and retreated. Click shut the vault door after him, the metal making a deep thump as it locked into place. The inner vault guards didn't like anyone coming in who wasn't specifically authorized, and that included her servant. She'd have to rely on the guards to move her now, but unfortunately her large wheeled chair was too bulky to fit between the rows of shelves in the main vault. Rissen felt a healthy dose of shame in front of her former Babsk as she was taken like a sack of roots from her chair with rear wheels to a smaller chair with poles along the sides. Being carried was the most humiliating part. The guards left her usual chair in the alcove, near the steps down to the lower level. Then Click and the guardsman the Queen had sent, Rissen didn't know his name, took the poles and carried her into the main vault chamber. Even here, in this job where she sat most of the time, her inability was a huge inconvenience. Her embarrassment was exacerbated as Chiri Chiri, who wasn't allowed in the vault for practical reasons, flitted by in a buzz of wings. How had she gotten in? Click chuckled, but Rissen only sighed. The main vault chamber was filled with metal racks like bookcases containing display boxes of gemstones. It smelled stale, of a place that never changed and was never intended to change. The guards carried her down one of the narrow rows, light from spheres tied to their belts providing the only illumination. Rissen carried the captain's rope in her lap and fingered it with one hand. Surely she couldn't take this offer. It was too generous, too incredible, too difficult.
"So dark," Vestim said. "A room full of a million gemstones, and it's dark."
"Most gems never leave," Rissen said. "The personal merchant vaults are on the lower level, and there's some light to those, with the spheres everyone has been bringing lately. These, though, they're always here." Possession of these gems changed frequently, but it was all done with numbers in a ledger. It was a quirk of the Thalen system of underwriting trades. As long as everyone was confident that these gemstones were here, large sums could change hands without risk of anything being stolen. Each gemstone was carefully annotated with numbers inscribed both on a plate glued to its bottom and on the rack that held it. Those numbers were what people bought and sold. Rissen was shocked by how few people actually asked to come down and view the thing they were trading to own.
0013017-36, Vestim said. "The Benval Diamond. I owned that way back when,
Memorized the number, even. Huh. You know, it's smaller than I thought it would be.
She and the two guards led Vestim to the back wall, which held a series of smaller metal vault doors. The main vault behind them was silent. No other scribes were working today, though Chiri Chiri did flit past. She hovered down toward the queen's guardsman, eyeing the spheres on his belt, but Rissen snatched her from the air. Chiri Chiri griped, buzzing her wings against Rissen's hand and clicking. Rissen blushed, but held tight.
"Sorry." "Must be like a buffet for her down here," Click said.
"A buffet of empty plates," Rissen said.
"Keep an eye on your belt, Click."
The two guards set her chair down near a specific vault. With her free hand, Rissen dug a key from her pocket and handed it to Vestim.
"Go ahead. Vault 13.
Vestim unlocked and swung open the smaller vault within the vault, which was roughly the size of a closet. Light poured from it. The shelves inside were filled with gemstones, spheres, jewelry, and even some mundane objects like letters and an old knife. But the most stunning item in the collection was obviously the large ruby on the center shelf. The size of a child's head, it glowed brightly. The king's drop. Gemstones of its size weren't unheard of. Most great shells had gem hearts as big. What made the king's drop unique was that it was still glowing, over 200 years after being first locked into the vault. Vestim touched it with one finger. The light shone with such brilliance that the room seemed almost to be in daylight, though shaded blood red by the gemstone's color.
"Amazing,"
Vestim whispered.
"As far as scholars can tell," Rissen said, "the king's drop never loses its stormlight. A stone this large should have run out after a month. It's something about the crystal lattice, the lack of flaws and imperfections."
"They say it's a chunk off the Stone of 10 Dawns.
"Another story," Rissen said. "You are a romantic."
Her former Babsk smiled, then placed a cloth shade over the gemstone to reduce its glare, so it wouldn't interfere with their work. He opened his ledger.
"Let's start with the smaller gemstones and work our way up, shall we?"
Rissen